Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Over the past 100 years, researchers and scientists from the Scripps Institution of Oceanography have been collecting and preserving thousands and thousands of creatures from the world's oceans, and collecting rocks from the depths of the void and cores from the ocean floors, painstakingly cataloging them in their historic collections to be used for all time. But their future is suddenly in jeopardy. Can the Earth bear the loss of life on Earth? We must do what we can to keep the collections intact when we return here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
I'm hoping that in a fairly short time, this program will inspire 400 people listening now, live or on the archives, to donate $1,000 to save the Scripps Oceanographic Collection. By the time this is over, I want you to click on the link on this page where you can easily contribute or send your tax-deductible contribution to the Scripps Collections. I suggest, if you're interested, call John Steinitz, who's the Scripps Development Officer, at 858-822-1865. We'll talk about that more. And if not now, or if not $1,000, then soon, with whatever you can. The Wildside News is committed to helping save this priceless, irreplaceable scientific treasure. We wish to thank the members of SEA, that's the Scripps Environmental Advocates, a women's organization that has taken on this cause in association with the Friends of the Collections, and who have made this possible. Now, they need your help. This is an investment in your children, and your children's children, and their children, too. The oceans are threatened. They're not destroyed. And the Scripps Collection contains the literal specimens of over 100 years and more of oceanographic history. It is a critical record of change, an irreplaceable baseline study, and the repository of genetic materials that will play a role in restoring our Earth. But only if we can take the actions necessary to keep the collections intact. As Dr. Kennel stated, we can bring oceans back, but it will require a level of human cooperation that we have not as yet seen. To help us understand and explain the importance of the oceanographic collections at Scripps, we welcome Dr. Philip Hastings, who is the curator of the Marine Vertebrates Collection, and Erica Gertze, whose graduate studies are defining the role collections will play in restoring our oceans to health. Dr. Hastings and Erica, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Hastings, let's start with you. And I'd like you to give us an overview of really what is involved in the collections.
Well, the Scripps collections are actually divided into five groups. Two geological collections, one that's a series of collections of dredged rocks from around the ocean, a series of cored sediments and microfossils as well, and then three biological components, a benthic invertebrates collection, which are animals without backbones that occur on the bottom of the ocean, pelagic invertebrates, which are those that occur in the water column or plankton, and then marine vertebrates, which primarily are fishes in this case.
Now, how long has it taken to acquire this collection? Where do they come from?
Well, the collections were officially started with the founding of Scripps over 100 years ago, but some of the material is actually a bit older than that. They underwent a very rapid growth phase through the 1960s and 1970s, but they actually are comprised specimens from around the world's ocean, and in fact, they are unique in that sense, and that Scripps, the history of Scripps exploration has been one of exploring the world's oceans, and as materials are collected from around the world, we have made a particularly concerted effort to archive those materials for use by future generations.
On the website, we have actually one image of just one row of the collections. Give an idea of what, if a person were to visit the collections, what they might actually see.
Okay, well, that photograph is of the marine vertebrates collection. It's stored in a very large room with a series of of shelves. The specimens, the fish specimens, which include over 2 million specimens, are housed in the facility there. They're generally preserved in isopropyl alcohol and then shelved according to taxonomic group.
And about how many do we have?
There's about 2 million specimens of fishes represented in this collection.
Now, some people are going to say, well, great, so you have a collection. Why is that important? Erica, you are researching. You're a graduate student, and you're researching the importance of collections into the future. Why don't you talk about how you feel these may serve the planet?
Okay, well, there are a few things one could address in answering that question, and I'll just focus on sort of one, in addition to the role that collections play right now, but there's one research line that I'm particularly excited about that may become available in the next decade, and that is that we're just starting to be able to extract genetic material from some of these older samples, and it will open up the possibility of looking at changes in the genetic composition of populations, particularly right off our coastline, dating back to 1903, which is for the pelagic invertebrate collections when the material was first starting to be collected. So, for example, you know, we have ongoing research right now looking at changes in the community composition or abundance of organisms, and partially in response to climate variability, for example, on interannual or interdecadal timescales, such things such as El Nino. But we don't really have any sense of how genetic composition might change through time. And these samples would provide, an amazing resource once we're able to really develop those techniques to address those questions. So that's one thing I'm particularly excited about, where we can go, we're actually just on the cusp of being able to do right now.
Dr. Hastings, one of the most important things is the fact that these collections actually show change through time. They're an incredible baseline study. Why is that important?
Well, it's important because the collections, the samples, actually are non-replaceable because they were taken at a particular time in history, and we can never go back to that time. In many cases, we can't even go back to the location in which they were collected because estuarine systems, for instance, in California have radically changed. And so they give us a picture of the historical conditions around the globe that otherwise would be unavailable.
Actually, because all these collections are cataloged and very specifically determined in terms of their geographic location, it's sort of like a three-dimensional holographic through time of change, isn't it?
It can be, yes, very much so. So we can get pictures of community composition, for instance, in the currents off California that date back through the 40s and 50s, and we can actually look at changes in community composition relative to changes in the environment. And this is certainly an important aspect of our research as we can potentially make predictions about the effects of global warming.
Speaking of research, the Scripps Collection is open to people from researchers and scholars from all over the world. Erica, you meet some of those people. What are people doing when they come to Scripps? What are they looking at?
There's a number of different visitors, and I would say there's sort of research visitors, and then there's also sort of educational people in the local community who come in as part of a classroom exercise or field trip. And in terms of the researchers that come from all over the world, they're usually trying to access material that they otherwise don't have access to in terms of global distribution. And it's a whole mix of people. I've seen people from Europe come through, people from Mexico. We have a number of people within the U.S. from other research institutions who've also come to work on material in the pelagic invertebrates collections.
Now, why is it important to have the actual specimens? How in the world might they serve the future on the Earth here? Dr. Hastings?
Specimens are particularly important because we don't always know what sort of information we might need in the future to answer questions that really have not even been posed. So, for instance, I may collect a series of specimens to answer a particular research question, but another researcher could come along several years later and have a completely new tool or a completely new question to address, and they will then have that material at their disposal.
Now, one of the things that I'm trying to do here is to help people understand that these collections actually, very sadly, are somewhat threatened because of budget cuts. In order to maintain the collections, it's very costly. This is high scientific material. It's about a $400,000 a year project, and we're encouraging people to support this effort. And you can go to the website and click on to find out all sorts of amazing ways to do that. But let's talk about what would happen if this collection were to be broken up. Erica, why don't you start?
What would happen if it were broken up?
How would this impact the significance of this collection?
Well, I mean, I would say, firstly, just as a student, just having the collections here at SIO has been an essential part of my development and sort of growth as an early stage oceanographer. I've spent a lot of time over there in the collections, and particularly in the early part of my career, looking at material and actually learning how to identify local organisms, for example, which is something that you really can't do just from reading papers in the library. And if those were gone, it's essentially lost as that kind of educational resource for students, and also for the broader San Diego community. But also, in terms of the research component, it's very difficult. If it were to be particularly fragmented, it's just would be extremely time-consuming and difficult to access material from the range, the geographic distribution that's currently present in the collection as it is now. For example, I'm able to right now request samples from, you know, all over the world. I mean, just yesterday I requested material from Indo-West Pacific that was collected when I was only a four-year-old child. And being able to actually obtain that from four or five different institutions would make the work much more difficult and much more costly than it is currently.
Dr. Hastings, we have about 30 seconds left. Tell us why you feel it's critical that these collections be maintained.
Well, these collections are a picture of the past that otherwise is unattainable. And if, considering the amount of effort that's gone into collecting the materials and then the enormous amount of effort that's gone into archiving them and maintaining the databases associated with these materials, it would be particularly tragic to lose that legacy that has been passed down over the generations of scientists at Scripps.
I want to thank you both, and I wish we had a lot more time. I encourage all of my listeners to go to the Wild Side News, click on this page, click on the various ways to go directly and help support these collections. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying so much. Thank you for being here.